Hare Krishna. It's the 13th today, and I'm just going to be answering some questions from devotees. I'm in Budapest at the present time, and will be here for a week before visiting another temple and then going to France for a two-week period. I've been getting a lot of edited files from Kaishori Devidasi. In fact, I have five of them sitting in my computer right now, and that's one of the reasons I haven't been able to find some peaceful time to continue with the podcasts. When I have so many files on hold and that require my attention, then I really feel impelled to put my time and energies into them, because I really want to complete this Shuddha Bhakti Chintamani book, and the faster I get them back to the editors, the faster that completion comes to reality. Okay, the first question is from Vinod Majari in Birmingham, and she asks the following question. Recently, we started a house program in congregational member's house, and she's a doctor. We found she's very appreciative of Srila Prabhupada and has attachment to him. However, she conducts abortions. That's her job. She seems to be defensive about it, saying she has saved so many women from unnecessary pregnancies by aborting them. I don't think she accepts that she's doing anything wrong. Do you think that eating the prasadam she cooks and offers to the Lord is something we should accept or not? I don't think it requires me to answer this question. Committing abortions is a sin. It's a horrible thing, and whereas people may argue that on very rare occasions it's a matter of saving the life of the mother, but that's really, really the exception. Generally, it's a matter of convenience for whatever the original cause of the pregnancy is. Therefore, I certainly would not want to eat something that was prepared or cooked by someone who performs abortions. It's tantamount to eating something that's cooked by a butcher. However, having said that, this person is trying to become a devotee, and therefore we should not discourage her with harsh words, but rather try to explain that there is karma involved in what she's doing, there's sin involved in what she's doing, and therefore, as individuals, better that we prepare food when having programs at her home, and she eat what offenseless devotees cook, initiated devotees cook, and that will be certainly better for those attending the congregational program, and it'll also be better for the doctor. And ultimately, if she is really appreciative of Srila Prabhupada and reads what Srila Prabhupada writes, she'll come to the conclusion that somehow or another she's got to find another line of work. She can use her medical know-how in a way that benefits people rather than kills them. Okay. The next is a series of questions from Barshana Devidasi relating to Snana Yatra of Lord Jagannath, and unfortunately that Snana Yatra festival is over. I'm going to try to answer these questions perhaps in advance of the actual event, the appearance day of Vaishnavas, the festival, so that they become more suitable objects of meditation and understanding when the actual day comes about. So if you also have questions about certain things, then if you pose those questions a few days in advance, then I can answer them, and that will be a better way of devotees putting to use the answers when the actual events take place. Okay, Barshana says, what is the significance of Snana Yatra festival? Why devotees enact such festival that leads to the Lord's getting sick. How is this pastime pleasing to the Lord? Okay, just one question at a time, and even then I'm going to be selective about how many of these questions I answer. Snanayatra festival is a public bathing of Lord Jagannath. In Vedic culture, worshipable personalities, great personalities, are bathed as part of a function for honoring them. We call it Abhishek. We read in Srimad Bhagavatam how Lord Balaram, Yudhisthira Maharaj, and others received this type of full bathing. And there, I believe, in Bhagavatam, the word is the Avabritta bath ceremony, which Srila Prabhupada says something that is accepted after the finishing of sacrificial performances. Yudhisthira Maharaj was bathed in that way upon his coronation, when sacrifices are completed, the same thing is there. And we see references of this throughout Shastra. So, and we also obviously perform these ceremonies also, Janmashtami, Gaur Purnima. And it's a form of respect. For instance, when a guest comes to someone's home, then you bathe his feet. In this way, it's a complete bathing. Obviously, person is attired in bathing attire when they're being bathed in this way. And that is being done to also worship and show respect to Lord Jagannath. However, because it's enacted as Lord Jagannath as part of Krishna's Naralila, then Jagannath also gets sick in the process, and getting sick allows devotees to render very confidential, intimate service for him. It also means that he doesn't go on the altar, which increases devotees' feelings of separation and thus their attachment to him. And in that way, it's very favorable to Krishna. And it's favorable to Lord Jagannath because he's also able to be absorbed in the mood of a king, a great king, albeit a person who is subject to getting cold, and thus he receives the extra attention, special attention, from his associates. These are some of the aspects of the question. There are many questions that Bharshana asks, but I'll just answer these three. And as I mentioned earlier to devotees, in order to be fair to others, and right now I've got about 15 questions here, just ask one question at a time. The next question is from down under, and Srimati Devi Dasi says, if a devotee commits a verbal offense against another devotee's spiritual master, should the disciple walk away and have nothing to do with that devotee? One devotee said that, I'm trying to decipher what this says, one devotee says that we should see that offense is caused due to ignorance, so we should be kind to the offending devotee and not take it too seriously. So my question is, at what point does compassion become sentimentality, as sometimes it seems to be a very fine line? There are a lot of things mixed in here, as I mentioned earlier, that sometimes devotees don't really clearly formulate their questions. So first thing is, if someone commits an offense to my spiritual master verbally, my immediate response is to correct that person. If that person or devotee does so unintentionally due to ignorance, then obviously his offense is not so serious, but it is my duty, it is my compassion upon him to correct that person. If that person is doing so with anger, venom, unjustly, and with malice, then not only should I, then we should see that his intent is not good. Not only should I correct that person, but yes, until that person apologizes for his, not misdemeanor, for his offense, I should not have anything further to do with him. So it depends upon who is offending, for what particular purpose, in what way, and these considerations should be taken in account when I'm responding. But response has to be there. One should verbally correct that person. If that correction is not accepted, if the motivation is very grievous, then one shouldn't continue to associate with that person until proper rectification is there. That is the proper sadachar. And it seems that there's another question here from Shrimati. She says, quoting from Srila Prabhupada in the 10th canto, first chapter, some devotees, having failed to complete the process of devotional service, are promoted to the heavenly planets to which the pious are elevated, and after enjoying there, they may be promoted to the place where Lord Krishna's pastimes are going on. My question is, are the devotees, Srila Prabhupada is talking about those who have engaged in sense gratification due to weakness, but with no remorse, and so they get a chance to enjoy the heavenly planets? Not exactly. Srila Prabhupada here points out the devotees who haven't completed the process of devotional service. The reason they haven't completed the process of devotional service is because they still have desire for material enjoyment. Therefore, they're elevated to the heavenly planets where they are allowed to fulfill their material desires. The potency of their devotional service takes them there. And in the heavenly planets, they must then also get further devotee association, and they must also execute devotional service by which they become free from material desires, by which they complete and perfect their devotional service, and then from there they go back home, back to Godhead. If for some reason they don't get such quality association there, then they will also come back down here in the material world. On the other hand, if someone has committed such extraordinary service that they deserve to go back to Godhead, but still some weakness is there, then they may enjoy the results of their material, or they may enjoy their material desires, the fulfillment of their material desires, and then when that material desire is fulfilled, then the power of their past devotion carries them on. This latter example is more the exception. It's more the former that's will be the general case. So we should not tarry in the heavenly planets, because staying there even for a little time is, in our calculation, a long, long time. And because of the extraordinary influence of Kali Yuga, which is also prevalent in the higher planets, although to a lesser degree, nothing is assured. What is assured is that if we're serious about Krishna consciousness, we can go back to Godhead in this lifetime. And that's what we should be doing. I'll continue on with podcasts tomorrow, answering more questions. And remember, if devotees have some particular theme, then please send those to me, and we'll try to discuss some subject matter, as opposed to answering individual questions or in addition to them. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.